Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back, as is Katie Schaefer. Today we're talking all about Golden Years, which is a 1991 TV miniseries, limited series, whatever you want to call it. And it was written by Stephen King, so this isn't an adaptation, technically. If I'm not mistaken, Katie, this was written for TV and TV only.
Yes, correct. That's my understanding as well.
And I'm kind of glad because I don't know if I would read this if it had a readable part to it.
Right. Yeah, this is a bit of a slog. And I mean, it would make an interesting, very short story, you know, maybe 30 pages. But
maybe
that 30 pages does not stretch out into, 230 minutes?
Yeah, it's about 4 hours.
Yeah, painfully long.
Yeah, and just felt like, given the cast, it should have been better.
Yeah, they've got some really good TV actors in this.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, it was a little weird slash ironic to be watching Felicity Huffman in a TV yes. show after the college admissions scandal. I was like, wait, that's Felicity Huffman? Because if you look at her long enough, she looks very similar. But at the same time, I was like, that doesn't even really look like her to me, because obviously this was 20 plus years ago at this point. So right. I was like, wow, all these people look very young.
Right. And, you know, to me, she kind of looks like Edie Falco. So I was like, so whenever I would go to, like, because she's on screen a lot in this. So
that's
what
it was.
I would go to the college admission thing in my head and I was like, I'll just pretend it's Edie Falco and then I can I can overlook this.
Yeah, that makes so much more sense. I can see that resemblance for sure. And I did want to point out, though, with the cast that Frances Sternhagen was in this, and she was also in Misery the year before.
Yes.
So she is a return King person. You get quite a few of those. Typically, you get a lot of directors and producers returning, but every once in a while, you will have a handful of actors and actresses who return. And it looks like she was in The Mist too.
Yes.
This lady is in everything.
She's a great, and she's a great actress, and she's
yeah.
super game. And you know who else? This has another King actor in it. The guy in Pet Sematary, the movie.
Yes. Victor Pascal from
yes.
the original Pet Sematary. I didn't really catch who he was
yes.
in this. I think he was sort of just one of the military guys or...
No, he was the photographer. He was the...
Oh, yes, yes, yes. The
he
crime
was her
scene
leak.
Photographer.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. See, I didn't even recognize him either.
Yeah. Dan or my partner recognized him and that was great. He was, isn't that the guy? And I was like, it is the guy with the bottle in his head.
Yeah.
And this has Stephen Root in it. And Stephen Root is a great comedic actor. Jimmy James from News Radio, for those of you who remember that show.
See, I just watched him in Barry.
Oh, he's in Barry. Okay.
Because I watched him in that literally like a week ago. I was like, his voice sounds so familiar, but because he has a slightly larger build and is, you know, 20 plus years younger, it took a while to click. I was like, oh, that's who that is. So to have a cast like this where you recognize so many of the faces, you're disappointed by the end of it because you're like, oh, okay. I mean, obviously they did with what they could with it, but I just think the story didn't have enough meat to it to make it a 4-hour thing. And I think it was a 7 or 8 episode miniseries. So minus commercials is how you get to the 4 hours, but it was not great story-wise. And it's always a bummer when you get something like this and you're like, oh, it's Stephen King. Okay, hopefully it's going to have all of this character work that we love. And it just really felt like it didn't have any well-roundedness to it.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I read about this one because I too was like, really? This is Stephen King? How did this get made? And I looked and he said that he was kind of inspired by Twin Peaks, but without
yeah.
the weird. And I was like, oh, see, only David Lynch can do Twin Peaks. Like this, it doesn't work. And it feels kind of like faux Twin Peaks-y, but it just never achieves those heights. And it's never interesting enough because you're right. King is known for his characters. And there's like an attempt of character development in this, but they're not very interesting characters. They feel flat, and except for Gina. Frances Sternhagen's character is pretty great. Mm-hmm. I like her a lot. But other than that, it was like you just feel like paper cutouts moving around on screen, despite a supposedly interesting story. And there's certainly a lot of death in it. People die.
Yes.
All the time in this movie. Brutally.
One thing that I did like, though, was the fact that he brought the shop into it, because the shop was a big part of Firestarter. And basically, since that book, at least through what I've covered until this, they've been mentioned here and there, but they never had a prominent role in anything else until this, if I'm not mistaken. You know, they do pop in and out, but they're present throughout all of Firestarter, pretty much. And then I would say for a good 2/3 of this, maybe the shop is involved.
Yeah. So the shop feels like it is a part of the Stephen King universe. And so for those who are familiar with King's world, it fits in really well. And I think it feels like that even if you weren't familiar with the shop, even if you've never read any Stephen King, but for some reason you watched this and you made it all the way through to the end, I think that's the feel you would get from it. So it's an interesting addition and probably their best choice of a myriad of choices that they made in this movie.
Yeah, and it's not that I don't like the premise of it. I think they just dragged it on way too long. And if they were going to drag it on this long, we needed to get more backstory from some of these characters, because they gave you little tidbits, but then it didn't really answer all of the questions you had. You obviously find out about the history between Terry and Jude and them working at the shop together. So once you find out that Terry works at, or formerly worked with the shop, you're like, okay, she has a much different perspective than, you know, General Cruz does. So she is able to advise him in a way that another security agent would not be able to.
Yeah. And I think that I was hoping for more backstory about Gina and Harlan, because they kind of feel like they're supposed to be the heart of the story. And, you know, Harlan's injury is what's driving the whole thing. And it just, we never get that. Instead, we get a lot of stuff about the shop that feels repetitive.
Yeah. Another character I would have liked to see a little more background on, because they started to go in that direction but then stopped, was Dr. Todd Hunter, because they have him visiting his father's grave. And I was like, oh, okay, there's something interesting here. And someone brings up his father again later. I don't remember who it was. It might have been someone from the shop. Knowing Jude, it was him. And I was kind of like, okay, what's the deal with this guy and his father? Was his father a scientist who had some great accomplishments and he's trying to follow in his footsteps? Kind of what's going on? And we never really get the answer. We just see him continuing to bury watches.
Yes.
And it was all very weird. And, you know, he was very much the mad scientist. But because they went in that direction, I was like, but what? what is it about this relationship with his father that makes him want to succeed at what he's currently trying to do? And we never get an answer to that.
Right. And Todd Hunter, who has the best name, I have to say. I couldn't help how much I thought that was great. And he's such a silly character and he's so over the top. And I think he, like so many of these characters, suffer from the fact that this was intended to be like a long pilot kind of, and they wanted to get like a whole show to explain it. And so I think these are supposed to be like little tidbits, but since they didn't get that whole show, it feels very lacking.
I honestly don't see how the show could have been any longer. You know, there's plenty that they could have cut out and put in those character backstory moments, and it would have been much better paced. This story didn't feel well paced at all. I watched the first 2 hours because I have it on DVD, so it was a 2-disc thing. And after watching the first part, I was just like, how is there 2 more hours of this? And I feel like it doesn't really get interesting until the last maybe 30 to 45 minutes, if that, when the shop is hunting them all down.
And by then, like, I just don't care anymore. I was like, I know this is the interesting part, but I just want it to be over because I've been watching it forever, and it's only now starting to get entertaining.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, you know, you and I both put 4 hours into this, and we're kind of like, well, that was a thing we watched, and, you know, clearly this is going to be a shorter episode than usual for something of that length, but it really just felt like there was so much lacking. And honestly, it had nothing to do with the cast and everything to do with how it was paced, how it was written. And since we have both read so many Stephen King books, we know that pacing can be a problem at times. And I kind of want to compare this to when we read The Tommyknockers.
Yes.
Because that story could have been much more condensed. And I think you could have told this entire story in half the amount of time, if not even less.
Yes. You could have just, you could probably edit this version of it down into 2 hours. If you were actually going to, you know, aim for a 2 hour, you could have cut a bunch of stuff out, put in some more character work, and then it would have been more interesting. But it's, it just keeps going, and it never really, it makes, the worst part about it is that it keeps going and it keeps repeating. It gives us the same information over and over again. And like that the shop is scary. The shop is dangerous. We can't trust them. And look how dangerous they are. Did I mention they were dangerous? It's just like, okay, I get it. Let's move on. I did like the mad scientist aspect of it. And I like how just over the top they went with that part of it. That part of it was just delightful. Yeah. So it's such a mixed bag, and all of the good stuff of what there is down at the very bottom.
Exactly. And we probably could have used a lot fewer scenes of Terry and General Cruz flirting with each other.
Oh my. What, and what was those dolls? The dolls that were in her office that were like floating back and forth across the ceiling that were these creepy.
It was her target practice. It was like a digital target practice kind of thing.
Right. I get that. But it was such a weird choice. Like, why did you put this in here? What purpose does this serve? And it never does. Like, it kind of felt like it was supposed to be something that, like, the dolls fall on somebody and then they people escape or something. But no. Nope, just a weird prop.
True. I think what Stephen King tried to do with this was get a little weird, but just a little weird is not good enough when it comes to his stories. They either need to be something straightforward like Misery or something extremely weird and bizarre like Pennywise and It.
Yes. It's either, it feels like
you can't do it halfway.
Yeah. It just, otherwise, it just feels like you're either not trying or you didn't mean to do it.
Yeah.
And that's very dissatisfying for audiences and viewers, readers and whatever. Like, you're just not going to grab people because they're like, well, did you mean to do this or is this on purpose? And that's never going to be a good result. You don't ever want your audience doing that. And that was how I felt throughout a lot of this movie.
Yeah, I almost felt like Harlan should have gotten younger a little quicker too, because it was so gradual that you're like, well, he doesn't look that much younger.
I know. It takes forever for it to feel like he's young. And I will say they do a pretty decent job with the age makeup in this, which is really hard, especially in that time period and with that budget. So it's well done, but it takes forever for him to get really young. And so it's, by the end, it feels like, was he ever old? I don't know. It's only because, you know, his wife stays old that it really feels like there's a contrast at all. Because he doesn't really act different throughout the film.
Right. On the note of the visuals, I did want to talk about some of the practical effects used and then some of the not so great CGI used.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of the explosions and everything like that you can tell are practical.
Yes.
And I liked that about it because those kind of things age well. Like when the lab blows up, you're like, okay, that's an explosion. It was big, looks good, we're fine. But then you get to that final sequence where Harlan grabs Gina and then they vanish. I don't really know what happened. It was so weird. I was like, okay, so he can cause earthquakes and teleport? I'm not totally sure there. And it's just this bright green light that looks so bad now. And it was just so green. I was just like, I don't know how else to describe it. I was like, this is too much.
Yes, it was. And they filmed that last scene like at the very end to add to the DVD release, and I'm sure the VHS release at the time, because when they didn't get picked up, the original ending that they showed on TV was a cliffhanger. And so when Stephen King's request to turn it into a show was denied, they shot a more ambiguously happy ending than what apparently ended in the original, which I could not find what actually happened. So that's why the one shown on TV is about 4 minutes shorter than the one shown on your DVDs.
That makes more sense. And I kind of want to know what that original one was like then.
Right.
But I guess you and I will not get to see that anytime soon. I do want to note that I don't know if they aged Frances Sternhagen up a little for this, but this was 28 years ago and she's 89 now. So she was 61.
Oh, they must have.
And she looked a lot older than 61 then.
Yeah. Yeah. She's supposed to be like 15 years older than that in the movie. So,
yeah.
Or, no, like 7 years older than that in the movie, I think she says. But yeah, they must have, because I mean,
I don't recall her looking that old in Misery, and that came out just a year before. She was obviously older, but I don't think her face was quite as worn.
Yeah, and I think that's what she kind of looks like now. If you look at her on TV, that's what she looks like now. So, you know, either she hit that age pretty quickly and then that's just how she looked, or they aged her up, because, yeah, that's kind of what I wondered as well. I was like, I feel like she's still alive.
Yeah, I had to check because I was like, she looks so old in that.
Right. She does. And yeah, so I think they did too. And obviously they did with him, because I think he was like in his mid-20s or early 30s when he made that movie. The guy whose last name I'm Zarabashka, I'm going to guess. Keith Zarabashka.
Yeah, I would totally butcher that.
That's my best guess.
That's why I didn't even bother trying. But yeah, he is 66 now. So he was in his 30s when he did that. And I had no idea. I was like, this dude looks really old. And I was like, but I feel like I've seen him in something else. And he did not look remotely like that.
No. Yeah, exactly. And I think even in the very end, he's still wearing, like, I don't think he's being shown just no makeup. I still think he's wearing like some age makeup in it, because he doesn't look that young.
Oh, yeah. He never looks young in it, even when they de-age him. And I was like, who is this guy? Because I feel like I know this name, but the face was not doing anything for me.
And you know what? Everybody knows that guy's voice, because that is what he does. He is a voiceover actor, a huge one for video games and TV shows. You don't see him very much, apparently, but that's crazy.
Yeah, he's done a lot of stuff. Angry Beavers,
Fallout 76.
Godzilla. Yeah.
Yes. It's an interesting show on a very low level. I mean, if you're a King completist, that's the only way you should watch this. Or if you really want a shop fix, I guess. You know, if you want to see another instance of that group.
Yeah. A little unfortunate for us that we may or may not be completionists.
Yes.
Or completists, whichever is correct. I don't know. But I have to do it for this podcast, and that's kind of the only reason I watched this. I don't think this would have caught my attention otherwise. I didn't even know about this going into it, and I knew he had written a few things specifically for TV that were never adapted from something. I didn't know there was this, but I knew there was Kingdom Hospital, and then I had found out about Storm of the Century, which I have as either a movie or a TV show, I forget which it is, but then I also have like the screenplay for it. So as far as I know, that's the only like print version of it.
Okay. So he kind of just dabbles in everything. That's kind of the best part, is there's so much so much Stephen King out there.
Yeah, I don't usually rate TV shows just because it feels like every single TV show has its ups and downs. But because this was a limited series, I was like, man, this is not great. It's like a 1.5 out of 5 or something for me, I think.
Yeah, I think I would rate this, on Letterboxd, I believe I rated it 0.5 star because I was just like, this is terrible. And like, I am a notorious lover of all things bad movie. I've seen every MST3K episode. Like, I love bad movies, but this committed the cardinal sin of bad movies. It's boring. And therefore, there's nothing to enjoy.
You can tell why it didn't get picked up for a full season.
Yes. Yes, you can. I was like, if you wanted this, you really should have cut it down a lot. A lot. And, you know, even if you look at it, like I said, this was kind of inspired by Twin Peaks. Like, the first season of Twin Peaks is, in not counting the new one, is the best season because it's super weird. Super, super weird.
Okay.
And then, like,
that's on my list of things to watch just because I've heard so much about it.
It's great. It's super great. But then, like, the, you know, it was made on regular television. And so they were like, too weird, dude. You got to tone it down. So the next couple seasons are like, okay, this, what happened to the show I loved? And then it ramps back up to crazy at the end of the third season. But that's kind of the thing I thought I was going with. It's like, well, with a show like this, you got to push it to super weird. And he just never does that in this.
Yeah. Well, like I mentioned earlier, this is going to be a pretty short episode here. And, you know, that's going to happen every once in a while.
Yes.
With Stephen King stuff, because there is so much of it. And I, you know, if anyone listening to this has listened to all of the previous episodes, you know, there have been some TV movies that haven't done quite as well. And I think just by nature, a lot of the TV stuff is going to be hit or miss more so than the big theatrical releases. But even the theatrical releases, and still today, you know, something like The Dark Tower was not super well received. And I still haven't seen it because of that fact. You and others were all like, nope, not good. Don't do it.
It's terrible. Oh, I think I gave that an incredibly low rating when I reviewed that one, I think, for Substream, and it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, part of that is due to the time frame when it was made.
Uh-huh.
Like, there wasn't really prestige TV outside of HBO and Showtime, you know? And now there's prestige TV all over the place. And you know, there's the Dark Tower series coming out that's based on Wizard and Glass and Castle Rock. So now we're spoiled. Now we get lots of good King stuff because they have the money to make it look good. And that's a big challenge, because if it doesn't look good, then no matter how great your story is, it's going to fall flat.
Exactly. Well, Katie, thank you so much for bearing with me through this experience. That was golden years.
Yes, this was better. The podcast was better than the show by far. Much more fun.
Well, I'm glad. And before we go, I want to quickly let you all know about our Patreon. You can support this podcast for $1 a month or $2 a month. The first will get you a thank you on the show. The latter will get you a Chat Cemetery sticker. There will be a link in the show notes to check that out. You can follow us at Chat Cemetery on Twitter and Instagram. And as always, thank you all for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.